It meant having a lab full of rambunctious paladins running her assistants ragged with requests for food, drink, and entertainment. She didn't want him checking out the new guy's hardware. And now she was telling him not to pay attention to Motorball Scuttlebutt. The thing about Scuttlebutt, though, was it tended to range far and wide. These guys could barely talk about anything else except the new guy's super chip that gave him super reaction time, super reflexes, and super coordination to match. Like he was born living at a faster rate than everyone else.
"Sounds like you've really outdone yourself with your latest enhancement," Ito said to Chiden after a bit.
"I outdo myself every day," Chiden said absently.
She was running a diagnostic on the part of the torso they had just finished applying skin to.
"I'm referring to this chip you've developed," Ito said, "in case you need me to narrow it down."
Chiden finished the diagnostic, then paused. Ito could practically see the wheels and gears turning in her mind while she decided what to tell him and whether she should lie a little or a lot. Sometimes Ito wished he'd never come to know her so well. Maybe they'd have had more to talk about.
"It's just a little something I've been working on with the spine," she said finally. "When I'm not making repairs or doing upgrades or swapping out lungs and livers. Right now I'm testing a prototype."
She beckoned him to join her at her desk and put up a 3D display.
"Since you're here anyway, let me ask, do those numbers look right to you?"
Ito felt himself go cold as he stared at the display. Well, he'd expected her to lie to him, he told himself. She'd done a lot to disguise it, rearranging some things and adding others that didn't seem to belong, but he knew he was looking at a partial schematic of his own chip. She had already installed it in the spine, and the discussion about brain-spinal cord arrangements had actually been her way of getting advice on the best way to utilize it. Had she really thought she could fool him? And how could she have possibly known he'd gone back to work on it after she left?
Hugo.
Ito's heart sank. Chiden might have overheard him talking about the chip to his friends, trying to show off how much he knew. Or maybe Vector had taken advantage of Hugo running his mouth the way kids do. He tried to remember what he'd told Hugo and all the thinking out loud he'd done. He'd just been running his mouth too, talking it up like it was a miracle. Hugo hadn't known about the problems. Ito had never gone into detail about those, just extolled the possibilities. Because nobody ever waxed rhapsodic about all the things they couldn't get right.
"That'll teach you, again," said a small voice in his mind.
It belonged to the sane, sensible man who hadn't wanted to come here.
"You can, can't you?"
Chiden was saying. Ito looked at her blankly.
"Stay a little longer,"
she said with exaggerated patience.
"You can stay a little longer and help me with these upgrades, can't you?"
Ito gave a weak laugh.
"Are you putting in super chips?"
"Don't you start,"
Chiden rolled her eyes. "If I hear the term super chip one more time, I'll go nuts and kill everyone I see." But he could only get through two upgrades before he could no longer stand to be in the same room with her. He apologized, telling her his lack of sleep was finally catching up with him.
"But you're an insomniac," Chiden said, frowning. "You never sleep."
"Sometimes I do," he replied. "I'm sorry, but I'm ready to drop where I stand, and I don't think Vector would like it if I spent the night with you, even if it was in your lab."
Chiden looked as if she were about to argue, then shrugged.
"You help me with the main problem. I can handle the rest of the upgrades myself."
"Great."
He headed towards the exit at the other end of the room, where Ajakari was just letting himself out.
"Hey, wait!"
Chiden called after him. He stopped and turned. Did she know he was on to her?
"Send me an invoice," she said.
Ito was blank again. An invoice for what? The chip?
"We'll pay your going rate," she then went on. "Whatever it is, I'll round up to all night. I'm sure you, the clinic, can use it."
"Oh, yeah. Thanks," Ito said and hurried out, hoping he hadn't lost the jacquerie.
Fortunately, the paladin had gone only half a block. Definitely not equipped with a super chip, Ito thought, as he caught up with him.
"Hey, Aja," Ito said. "What about this new guy and his so-called super chip?"
"What do you mean, Doc?"
The jacquerie looked mildly puzzled.
"You must have seen the videos."
"Yes, but how does he seem to you?" Ito asked him. "You know, up close and personal."
The jacquerie shrugged his big shoulders.
"He's a whole new brand of fast."
"Yes, I saw." Ito tried not to show impatience. "What else can you tell me about him?"
"Other than he makes the rest of us look like we're standing still," Ajakati said. "Not much."
Apparently, that was all he was going to get tonight, Ito thought. He thanked the cyborg and started across the street.
"Hey, Doc, wait," Ajakati said. "Is there any chance at all, you might come back to the pits? We sure need you."
"Sorry,"
Ito said, and walked swiftly around the nearest corner before the paladin could say any more. Ito told himself he was too tired to think straight about anything, that he could open the safe after a few hours' sleep. Whatever he'd find now would be there tomorrow. His resolve lasted all of 15 minutes before he went down to the cellar. He found only what he already knew. The chip was gone. But he had no way to know when it had been taken.
Wrong.
He did. It would be logged to his phone, even though he'd muted the alarm, which was the stupidest thing he'd done lately. Or ever. If he hadn't, he'd have known the very moment it happened. Ito looked at his phone and decided that he didn't have to know now. Maybe tomorrow, or the next day, or next year, when he could better withstand one more thing to feel bad about. Chapter 13.
"Some people you only have to tell once, and they get the message," Vector said to Hugo as they sat in the back of the limo.
The clink of ice in his glass as he took a sip sounded rich somehow, and the amber liquid looked even richer. Hugo sipped from the small bottle of soda Vector had given him, unconsciously mirroring the man's actions. So far, he was still on the seat, and he intended to stay there.
"Sadly, our Northland friends don't know what's good for them," Vector went on. "Not even after I put two of them out at Farm 43 to pick asparagus."
He looked at Hugo with pleasant curiosity.
"You like asparagus?"
"I love it, sir,"
Hugo said. He'd never had any. Vector nodded approvingly.
"It's a food for the discriminating palate. It can be harvested by machine, but it bruises the stalks and damages some of the nearby plants that aren't ready to be picked."
Vector leaned towards Hugo and lowered his voice a little.
"The factory are all cheapskates, tighter than a duck's ass. They won't spend money on a better harvester. They'd rather cross their stingy fingers and hope some laborer has a hardware brainwave and builds them one for free."
Vector sipped again.
"But you never heard that from me."
"No, sir,"
Hugo promised, shaking his head solemnly.
"But asparagus is best picked by hand anyway," Vector said, sitting back. "It's the only way to really do justice to it. You know, in ancient times..."
Vector paused for another sip.
"Asparagus was reserved for kings. Commoners weren't good enough."
Vector smiled at Hugo.
"But I doubt I'm telling you anything you don't know."
Hugo dipped his head in a non-committal way. For all he knew, Vector was spinning him a line, but it was his limo. If he wanted to tell fairy tales about vegetables all day, Hugo was all ears.
It might make Vector feel generous.
It's hard work, even for a cyborg tailored to the job. But hard work makes people feel good.
Vector had another sip from his glass, and Hugo had a drink of his dark brown soda. Hugo was a bit leery of drinks he couldn't see through, but this tasted pretty good. Vector said it was from his private stock of something called Coke. Weird name, but it had a nice bite.
Anyway, two of the Cabal are picking asparagus, Vector said, and waiting to have their lumbar regions replaced while they contemplate the folly of their misdeeds. I thought this would make their cronies do likewise.
For a long moment, Vector stared down at his glass. Hugo hoped he wasn't supposed to contemplate the folly of his own misdeeds. He was tired of thinking about all the ways he'd screwed up.
I was wrong, Vector said after a bit. I'm not wrong often, and I don't like it. But when I am, I have to take action. I may not want to, but it's my responsibility. People in Iron City have been let down too many times. Their leader can't be one more big disappointment.
He looked at Hugo with an expression so serious it was frightening.
You see what I mean, don't you?
Hugo nodded, trying to look like he knew something. If there's something I can do to help, sir, just ask.
Good to know I can count on you, kid.
Vector's heartfelt tone only increased Hugo's anxiety. People always sounded like that right before they threw you under a bus for your own good. Whoever had talked his father into his first cyborg replacement had probably sounded like that.
Our Northland friends have regrouped, even though there are only four of them now. Five, if you count the cybersurgeon.
Hugo was confused for a moment.
You mean the one that built the TR...
Vector put up a hand, and Hugo promptly shut up.
A designer with a lot of potential, but no judgment whatsoever. Speed doesn't mean much if a person can't stand up to the aggression and, physical demands that make Motorball what it is.
I agree completely, Hugo said.
Vector looked at him with a faintly surprised expression, and Hugo realized that hadn't been a cue to speak. Mortified, he dropped his gaze to his nearly empty bottle.
The Northland Cabals learned nothing, Vector continued after a moment. I thought their pet cybersurgeon would have taken her act on the road, off to the Badlands. Instead, she's hiding out in somebody's cellar, working on their new project. Unfortunately, for them, I know what that is.
Vector put down his glass and held out his arm so Hugo could see the pictures on his phone screen. Hugo wasn't sure what he was looking at as Vector scrolled through the photos, whether these were real or extremely detailed artist concepts. Vector kept scrolling, and eventually Hugo saw these were photographs of an actual cyborg, with onboard attachments coming out of his forearms and biceps and even his thighs. This cyborg didn't swap out tools. It carried extra limbs with whatever gear was required. One foldaway arm within an arm was equipped like a standard all-purpose toolkit.
You see the problem, don't you, Hugo?
It wasn't a question, but this time Vector wanted a response.
Well, yeah,
Hugo said, wondering how to bluff.
All that stuff...
is too damn much. Exactly. Got it in one.
Vector gave him an attaboy punch on the arm that almost knocked him over.
It's far too much for the average person.
He sat back and turned off the phone display.
Our hapless Northland friends have no idea what life is like for the average person in the Iron City workforce. They never considered what this would cost. Nobody could afford a body this elaborate.
Hugo took a moment to let out a relieved breath while Vector poured himself a refill.
Or maybe they thought a TR like this shouldn't cost any more than a standard TR, he said, returning the decanter to the holder next to his seat. But it would put vendors out of business in a week. Vendors aren't deck men, they're people. With families, mouths to feed, employees to pay, who also have families and mouths to feed. You see where I'm going? Hugo nodded, hoping he did. And that's leaving aside the fact that it's also beyond the average person's biology. Vector showed him the phone screen again. All those things. It would take a brain twice the size of normal to coordinate all those extras.
Or a superchip, Hugo thought.
A superchip would speed up a brain so it could handle all that and more.
Vector was looking at him expectantly.
Yeah, that's bad, Hugo said, trying to think fast. I don't know what to do. Maybe warn people that this is a super expensive TR that could kill them?
How? Vector asked, as if he really thought Hugo could tell him.
I could release a statement, but would anyone read it? Have my tuner read it in the stadium before every motorball game? She's prettier than I am. Some people might pay attention instead of just chucking bottles and cans at her.
Vector gave a short, humorless laugh.
Don't worry. I'm not serious.
Now he sighed.
I'm telling you, Hugo, I see a future where the streets are littered with the bodies of people whose heads have exploded.
Hugo didn't think that sounded terribly plausible. If people couldn't afford the souped-up TR in the first place, their heads were in no danger of exploding. But it was Vector's world. Hugo was just living in it.
I want to do whatever I can to help, Hugo said finally, but I don't know what that is.
I do, Vector said promptly, giving him a big smile.
This cyborg is already running around loose, a living advertisement for our Northland friends. We need to get him off the street before things get out of hand. And there's only one crew I know of that's good enough to take him down.
You got it, Hugo said.
Hold out your phone, Vector ordered him.
He obeyed, and Vector tapped it with his own.
There. Now you've got photos and a list of his hangouts. I've also included a map of Northland, in case it comes to that. You needn't worry about, turf. I've put it out that if you're in Northland, you're on a job from me. You shouldn't have any trouble, but if you do, tell me and I'll fix it. I couldn't offer you the same protection in Southtown, as you weren't there on my business.
Hugo felt heat rush into his face. Was there ever a time when he wouldn't be reminded about that?
Vector gave him a friendly slap on the shoulder. But all that's in the past, okay, kid? Just do this job right, and it's all good. Because we don't have much info on the target, I'll give you a week to deliver.
Maybe if you hear more about him, you can text me, Hugo started.
Are you nuts? Vector snapped, making him jump. We can't communicate while you're on a job. Anyone finds out I'm giving you special treatment, I'll have every goddamn snowflake in town after me, wanting special this and special that.
He looked furious a moment longer, then relented.
If I find out anything useful, I'll get a message to you. But you don't call me. Clear?
Hugo nodded. Vector's glass was empty again, and Hugo could tell he wanted another refill. But he wouldn't let himself have it until Hugo left, because he was tipsy, Hugo realized. One more and he'd be drunk, and Vector couldn't be drunk in front of people like Hugo.
Vector nudged him. Any questions?
No, sir, Hugo said. I got everything I need.
Great, Vector said. So go out there and do what you do. Make me proud, kid. You got 5 days.
Hugo almost opened his mouth to tell Vector he had originally said a week, and then decided he'd better get the hell out before Vector cut it to 3 days. The moment the door shut behind the kid, Vector reached for the decanter. "Rear view," he said as he poured, and a small flat screen folded down from the limo ceiling. It lit up to show the street behind him. Hugo was running away like a good little jacker, not looking back or stopping to talk to anyone. Vector considered having someone check on the kid, just to make sure he was behaving himself, then decided he didn't need to spend the money. He could tell Hugo wanted to please him. Maybe it was some kind of father thing. The kid was an orphan, after all. "That is a big guy," Koyomi said. She sat between Hugo and Tanji in their usual spot in the café. Hugo had tapped the info Vector had given him to both her and Tanji's phones, and she was studying the screen with a nervous expression. "The last guy was just as big," Hugo said. "No, this guy's bigger," Koyomi insisted. "He isn't any bigger than the biggest guy we ever took down," Hugo said, and looked at Tanji to back him up. Tanji, however, looked as apprehensive as Koyomi.
"She's right, Hugo. That's like a tank, heavy all the way through, thick."
"Lots of mass," Koyomi put in helpfully.
"Yeah, that," Tanji said. "After he's down, we'd have a lot of trouble moving him."
"That's what the truck is for." Hugo was starting to get impatient. "Remember the truck? With the winch in the back? If you're feeling puny, have another coffee. We got time. It's still early." Koyomi slid off her stool. "Anybody want anything? I'm not treating," she added as Tanji opened his mouth.
"No thanks,"
Tanji said, looking slightly disappointed. Hugo waited till Koyomi was at the counter before he turned to Tanji and said, "Man, you're such a boob sometimes."
"I'll tell my shrink," Tanji replied, "but she's right. This is a big job. As much as I like splitting three ways, I think we need two more on this. Diff and Louie, they've both got muscle."
"Diff?" Hugo made a skeptical face. "Diff's kind of a lump," Koyomi said, materializing between them. She was holding a cup of something hot crowned with a small peak of ersatz whipped cream.
"He's solid," Tanji corrected her.
Koyomi gave a short laugh. "You practically have to tell him to put one foot in front of the other to get him to walk."
"Then he can drive the truck," Tanji said.
"Does he know how to drive anything?" Hugo asked.
"He can learn by doing," Tanji replied.
"No, we stick to the plan," Hugo said. "Vector gave me 5 days to bring this guy in. We can do it in one night."
5 days is time enough to make a new plan," Koyomi said.
She had licked off most of the whipped cream. What remained gave her a white mustache as she drank. Hugo shook his head emphatically. "Originally, he gave me a week. 2 seconds later, he says 5 days. I was afraid if I hung around any longer, he'd say he wanted it yesterday, and why was I late again?"
"He might say that anyway when we show up tonight," Tanji said.
"If he says tomorrow, he wanted it yesterday. That'll mean he wanted it today," Koyomi said.
"Just what is it you're trying to say?"
Tanji asked her. "I guess that's why we ought to get him today. And I'm not trying to say it, I said it," Koyomi frowned. "Sometimes I really don't know about you two." It seemed to Hugo, as they left the café, that the streets were emptying more quickly than usual. He looked up. Clouds were rolling in, promising rain as they obscured Zalim's ever-present disk. "Hey," he elbowed Tanji, "is it supposed to rain tonight?" Tanji grimaced and pointed at the sky.
"Looks like it's gonna, whether it's supposed to or not."
Hugo frowned. Rain made the streets slippery for gyros. They'd done a lot of jobs in the rain, but he was tempted to call the whole thing off and do it tomorrow. Of course, it might rain even harder then, so what the hell? Doc Ido had called Iron City's climate tropical, good for growing orchids and rainforests in the wild, and mold and mildew in town. Hugo had offered to take him out to the Badlands so he could see a rainforest in person, but the doc said he was too busy. It was too bad because that wasn't the only thing he wanted Ito to see. Tanji gave him a shove.
I said, do you want to check the Widow Shin's bar first?
Hugo stared at him blankly.
Earth to Hugo, where the hell did you go?
Tanji asked, annoyed.
I'm right here, Hugo said defensively.
You better be, said Tanji, glaring at him. This is your show.
You just worry about checking Widow Shin's, Hugo told him.
Hey!
Koyomi snapped her fingers between their faces.
Guys, I don't know what's your damage, but shake it off. This is a job, not a telenovela.
You still watch those?
Tanji said scornfully.
Only for pointers on how to handle you two, Koyomi said. Widow Shin's is that way.
She pointed at a place where the main road curved away from the flyover remnants, and she moved towards Tanji's gyro.
Hey, can I drive?
The truck is that way, Hugo said, pointing in the opposite direction, toward the cathedral ruins. I'll go pick it up and meet you guys at Widow Shin's.
I'll drop Koyomi at Widow Shin's and stake out his other bar, Tanji said, climbing on his gyro and starting it up. If he shows up, I'll text you. And you, don't ask stupid questions, he added to Koyomi as she climbed on behind him and put her arms around his waist.
Hugo rode to the abandoned warehouse's loading dock, pulled the tarp off the truck, and put his gyro in the back. No one ever came down here. No one who would care what was under a very grungy-looking tarp, anyway. But just in case, he'd switched around some of the wiring under the dash, making it impossible to hotwire normally. He got the idea from listening to Ido tell one of his patients how he was rewiring his legs. Driving the truck past the cathedral reminded him that he hadn't climbed up to the platform around the spire for a while. It was the only spire completely intact, and the platform was solid. It was probably the highest point in Iron City, higher even than Vector's factory penthouse, which was supposed to have killer views from every window. Hugo doubted any of them were really as good as the one from the spire platform. But then, those were probably views of Iron City. He only wanted to look at Zalem, seeing the setting sun hit the skyscrapers at the edge of the disk, making the glass flash like it had burst into flames, and the light lingered on the buildings even after it was dark in Iron City. Zalem was up so high, sunsets happened a lot later for them. When this job was over, he'd get back up the cathedral spire. Until he had 1 million credits in his lockbox, that was as good as it would get for him. Hugo backed the truck into an alley 3 blocks from Widow Shin's and rode his gyro to the bar. He'd never been to this particular bar, but then he seldom went to bars. Booze cost money he had a better use for. The place was a dive, which meant it wasn't as clean as a joint, but it didn't have as many brawls as a hellhole. No one gave him a second look as he went in and made his way to a table in a far corner. There was a glass on it half full of something slightly darker than the coke Vector had given him. Hugo moved it closer to himself so he'd look a paying customer, and noticed there was a layer of something in the bottom that looked like mud. It figured, he thought. When you ordered something on the rocks, you had to specify still water. Otherwise, you got industrial tap, with real rocks frozen in it. The table gave him a good view of the rest of the bar, which was full but not overly crowded. Hugo looked around and didn't see Koyomi. Irritated, he phoned her.
"Where are you?"
he asked.
"Across the street, watching the front door," she said. "I don't have to be in the bar to watch for the target."
"Why?" Hugo said impatiently.
"If you'd ever been a pretty young girl alone in a bar, you wouldn't have to ask," she snapped.
Hugo felt like an idiot.
"Sorry, I didn't think anyone would bother you."
"Seriously?"
Koyomi squeaked with disbelief.
Half of them are creeps whose wives don't understand them. Half are Northland creeps whose husbands ignore them, and you don't want to know what the rest of them want. Don't expect me to come back in just because you're there now. No, it's okay. Call me if you see him, or I'll call you.
Hugo hung up as a waitress came towards him. She was holding a dozen dirty glasses in an enhanced cyber hand and a small order tablet in another. She looked so exhausted, Hugo felt tired just looking at her.
"Another?"
she asked him in a flat, nasal voice.
"Still working on this one, thanks," Hugo said.
"You've been nursing that for so long, I swear you look younger."
She looked at the glass.
"Don't you like it? That's Iron City Black Tar."
Hugo squirmed a little.
"It looks like it."
The waitress leaned over and stirred it with the pinky of her normal hand. The dark swirl in the glass looked even more like mud.
"There," she said. "Now you can't see it. Out of sight, out of mind. Down the hatch. You're welcome."
Hugo pushed the glass farther away as she stumped off. His phone said it was after 2 a.m. He should probably wait till 2:30 before giving up, but what the hell? He got up to leave, thinking the guy might have gone to the other bar. Once he got outside, he'd call Tanji, and if the cyborg was still a no-show, they'd call it a night. Vector should have given them more information, he thought, making his way through the room towards the door. He opened the door and immediately bounced off something solid and unyielding. He staggered back a few steps, trying to regain his balance. But something shoved him hard in the center of his chest, and he flew backward several feet, going down hard on his tailbone. The room erupted in screams of laughter, as if this was the most hilarious thing the happy clientele of Widow Shins had seen lately, or ever.
"Young people today," boomed a jolly male voice. "They just can't stand up to a drink."
More laughter. Wincing with pain, Hugo started to push himself to his feet. He was on one knee when he looked up at the man standing over him and nearly fell over again.
"Hey, little fella."
The cyborg looked exactly like his photos. He bent over with his hands on his knees, grinning hugely.
"If you can't hold your liquor, you ought to watch where you're going."
Koyomi and Tanji had been right, Hugo thought, unable to move. This guy was enormous. Why hadn't he seen that? Because he'd only seen what Vector was paying, and he'd wanted to show Vector he could do the job right. The money and the need to prove something had made him stupid when he should have been observant and cautious. The cyborg's biceps opened and shiny mechanisms unfolded from each one. Both had large pincers on the end. They grabbed Hugo under his arms and lifted him up until he was eye to eye with the cyborg, his feet dangling freely above the floor. The pincers squeezed so hard, Hugo felt as if his flesh were being crushed. He jammed his lips together, refusing to cry out in pain.
"Better go home, kid."
The cyborg ruffled Hugo's hair with his regular right hand in a parody of affection.
"I bet your mama's worried sick about you."
Still holding Hugo up, he turned around and tossed Hugo against the closed door. Hugo rebounded and fell on his tailbone for the second time. The pain was actually blinding. Hugo couldn't help crying out and didn't care. Ignoring the jeering laughter, he scrambled to his feet and fled. His tailbone was still throbbing as he stumbled across the street, looking for Koyomi.
"What the hell did you do in there?"
Koyomi demanded, materializing out of the shadows.
"You always said we shouldn't call attention to ourselves on a job. By the way, did you see the cyborg? He went in just before you came out. I called Tanji. He's on his way."
Hugo groaned, barely aware of the sound of Tanji's gyro coming towards them as he rubbed one armpit and then the other. The cyborg hadn't had to hurt him that much. He'd simply enjoyed it.
"Bastard," Hugo thought, biting back tears from the pain under his arms.
"Where you want to take him?"
Tanji asked.
"I saw a couple of places."
"It's off,"
Hugo growled, straightening up.
His tailbone gave an intense throb, as if to remind him it hurt too.
"Go home. We'll meet up tomorrow and make a new plan."
"Really?" Koyomi blinked at him.
"Why?"
Tanji asked, looking equally baffled.
"Because I said so, that's why," Hugo said testily.
Tanji's face lost all expression.
"Oh, so it's like that now?"
"No, it's not," Hugo said in a heavy voice.
Tanji was unmoved and Koyomi looked wary.
"You guys were right. He's big. We need a couple more people with us."
Tanji looked from Hugo to the bar and back again.
"What happened in there?"
"Nothing," Hugo said. "I just got a good look at him, and my gut said, not tonight."
"Okay," Tanji said. "I never argue with the gut either."
Koyomi nodded in agreement, climbing on the back of Tanji's gyro so he could give her a ride home. Hugo waited until they were gone before he got on his own gyro. Then he got off again and walked it to the alley. Driving the truck was marginally less painful, but he certainly couldn't park that at the curb in front of his apartment. Covering it with a tarp at the loading dock proved to be a serious challenge. Hugo had to climb up on the cab, then onto the trailer to cover it properly, and even that hurt. Then he had to ride his gyro home, unless he wanted to sleep in the back of the truck with it. He was seriously tempted, but he could see there wasn't much ventilation. He'd wake up sick. And his ass and his armpits would be worse. It always hurt more the next day. Hugo started to walk the gyro away from the loading dock towards the cathedral and suddenly heard voices, familiar voices. He couldn't quite place them, but he knew they weren't any of his friends. They were coming from inside the cathedral, which wasn't good. Everyone around here knew better than to go in there. It was the crew from Southtown who had kicked the shit out of him. He moved behind a partially broken-down wall and watched the front entrance through a gap in the bricks. He didn't have to wait long before three guys came out, all hopped up on what they'd found stashed inside. The first one was the guy who had given Hugo a farewell kick in the kidneys. The second one, Hugo didn't recognize. The third had gold-tipped hair.
"Hey, guys,"
the leader said cheerfully as the other two leaped up to bump chests.
"Muffle it till we get home, will ya?"
Abruptly, the flat screen mounted on a building across the street lit up, making all three of them jump. The screen turned on whenever its sensors detected more than two people at the cathedral. Hugo chuckled silently as they stood transfixed by the images. Apparently, they didn't have a lot of outdoor flat screens in Southie.
"Jeez, do bounty hunters hang around here?" asked one of the guys. "Look at all those marks." "If you see a mark, call the factory," said the leader, running a hand through his silly hair. "Right now, they could hear you without a phone."
Hugo spotted a gleam of copper on his wrist.
"Why would a dealer keep their stuff here?" said the second guy. "Where a screen lights up with marks for bounty hunters. That's nuts."
"That's awfully good stuff," said the first guy.
That was the signal for the two of them to jump up and bump chests again.
"You took too much. I'm going to have to throw you guys in a cold shower," said the leader, impatient now.
"I don't see why we just don't take the whole thing and sell it ourselves," said the first guy.
"Because they'd find out we stole it and come after us," said the leader, speaking slowly and distinctly, as if to a small child. "And nobody'd lift a finger to help us."
"We could kick their asses and then shut out everybody who didn't have our back," said the second guy.
"Then who would we sell to?" the leader asked.
The other two guys looked sheepish. The leader threw his arms around their shoulders.
"Listen, do I keep you guys around to think?"
They shook their heads.
"That's right. Why do I keep you around?"
He waited a beat.
"To party with. That's why you're here and why we're keeping this little treasure to ourselves. Just us three. Nobody else in the crew needs to know about it."
"How'd you find out about it anyway?"
the second guy asked him. "Just tell us that."
I can't betray a confidence. The leader made a sad face. All I'll say is, drug dealers ought to be a lot nicer to the people they cheat on their main squeeze with and not break up with them by text. Because that really hurts their feelings and makes them tell a friend about where the dealer stashes their goodies. Now come on, the bus stop's a block away and I want to get home before dawn.
When are we coming back?
The second guy asked plaintively.
2-3 days, said the leader magnanimously.
Make it 2,
the first guy said hopefully. Hugo stared after them as they ambled up the street. All jacked up on stolen drugs, and they were going back to Southtown by bus? These guys were geniuses. He stifled a laugh. In Southie, they probably were. After a bit, he straightened up. His armpits and tailbone let him know what they thought of that, but now he didn't feel it quite so much. He knew what they'd been sampling. The Duchess had been stashing inventory in the cathedral for ages. Hugo wasn't especially fond of her or any other drug dealer. However, she'd never hassled him about climbing up to the spire platform. Hugo discovered there was no riding position that didn't hurt. Taking pressure off his tailbone put more pressure on his armpits and vice versa. He managed to make it home, trading off one pain for another. It was just his luck to get hurt in 2 of the most laughable and inconvenient places on the human body. And once again, he couldn't tell anybody.
Oh, yeah, the guy had me by the armpits. Hurt? I thought I was gonna die.
Tanji would laugh till he peed. Koyomi would probably have the decency to try not to. God only knew what they'd say if he told them it hurt to sit down. They'd be forwarding him ads for spanking dominatrixes for the rest of his life. Damn it. When he finally made it home, he took a few moments to make sure the lockbox was safe. Then he took a few more moments to count his credits, just in case he had miscounted last time and he actually had less than he thought. Or in case some miraculous increase had occurred, courtesy of a guardian angel, or a good fairy, or a secret agent of the universe on a mission to make life fair, none of which he believed in, but what the hell did he know? He hadn't miscounted either way. After putting the box back in its hiding place, Hugo stripped to his underwear, dropping his clothes on the floor around the bed. His tailbone objected to his lying on his back. His armpits didn't much care for either side. When he rolled over onto his stomach, his armpits reminded him not to raise his arms or try to hug his pillow. Curling up into the fetal position was also no-go, he discovered. Eventually, he found a position that gave him the least amount of pain and might actually let him get some sleep. He dozed off sometime after the sun came up, thinking that, for the first time, he could see how people might decide to swap out the parts they were born with for something less sensitive. Chapter 14.
He's intractable, said Chiden.
What's that supposed to mean?
Vector asked, annoyed. She had definitely spoiled tonight's special dinner, Chiden thought, with bitter satisfaction. They were both having prime rib to celebrate the start of what was supposed to be Vector's ongoing success with their super-chipped paladin. She had barely touched her food, which also irked him. Anytime she didn't grovel in abject gratitude, it put his nose out of joint. The way things were going, he'd have to swap it for a cyber nose.
Well,
Vector said impatiently.
He's stubborn, Chiden said. Unmanageable. Doesn't play well with anybody, even himself. Whatever team you put him on will walk out, including the factory practice team.
Vector paused with his hand on the wine bottle.
You're kidding.
I lost my sense of humor ages ago.
Chiden heard the door behind her open, a bodyguard-slash-waiter coming to see if they wanted anything. The service in Vector's office was impeccable.
Get out!
Vector barked. The door shut quickly. That would come back to bite him if there were any justice, Chiden thought. But there wasn't. Never had been.
Talk to me, Vector ordered her. You're at the stadium all the time. You know what's going on better than I do.
He's intractable, Chiden said again. Refuses to cooperate even when it's in his best interests.
I got that the first time, Vector said. Unmanageable, people threatening to quit. What does he want?
Chiden shrugged. He wants what he wants, when he wants it.
Ah, Vector nodded knowingly. Gratification.
Sometimes she forgot how intelligent Vector was. She had to remember not to underestimate him.
So, get a handler to wrangle him and fetch whatever he wants.
That would be okay if he wanted lollipops, Chiden said, cutting a piece of prime rib. He wants the world to not be so slow, for everyone to love him, to win all the time without even trying, and not just motorball.
Then get him a harem and a chorus of yes-men, Vector said, exasperated.
I tried that, Chiden said. Some things you can't even pay yes-men enough to withstand.
Vector threw up his hands. What do you want from me? I got you the chip. You said you'd only put it in a cyborg sophisticated enough to handle that kind of acceleration. Otherwise, the chip would probably blow out all the nerves. So I got you sophisticated cyborg parts to save you the trouble of building them from scratch. You're welcome, by the way.
So what do you want? A gold star?
Chiden gave a single hard laugh.
Those parts needed a lot of work before I could install the chip.
And you said you'd make him the best ever, even better than Garishka before he crapped out and went back to the sewer. You made a lot of promises, and I put up with a lot from you.
Chiden's jaw dropped. You put up with a lot from me?
And suddenly you can't deliver because you've got all these problems, Vector continued, as if she hadn't spoken. I don't pay you to have problems. I pay you to build champions. Get him on the track for tomorrow's game.
Chiden cut some more prime rib for herself. Well, there's just a tiny little difficulty, she said.
So? Fix it.
I'll need a lot of help, she said. I mean, a lot.
So? Get a lot of help.
Vector was dangerously frustrated with her now. He had never hit her, but sometimes he grabbed her arm and left a hand-shaped bruise. I said a lot. Everyone you can spare and everybody else. For a moment, Vector just glared at her. Then light dawned.
Oh, God.
He leaned his head back and closed his eyes.
You can't find him.
We have a winner, Chiden said flatly.
I just saw him last night at the stadium with his trainer. What happened?
Asked Vector, his voice heavy. You did, Chiden replied. You inspired him. You left to go somewhere else more interesting, and he decided to follow your example. To go someplace that didn't piss him off so much, was what he told Ed on his way out.
So he rolled out?
Vector asked in disbelief. No, first he got Ed to put his feet back on. Chiden glanced at Zalim. A wave of intense longing ran through her.
Ed's a moron, Vector said, disgusted.
No, Ed's observant. He's observed what happens when Chase doesn't get his way, but don't take my word for it. Let's look at the highlights. Screen, please. A screen on the wall to Chiden's left lit up. It was one of the very few things in Vector's office that he allowed her to control. The videos she wanted were already queued up and waiting. The first one showed Chase, in red and orange armor with a flame design, skating behind a group of factory practice players.
They barely qualified as paladins, but they'd once been serious contenders for a championship before hard living, injuries, and age had eroded their abilities. But they weren't pushovers either. Anyone who practiced with them felt it the next day. It didn't take long for Chase to catch up with the practice team, who were obviously trying like hell to pull farther ahead. Chase began playing with them, letting them think they were getting away, then speeding up so he was practically on their heels before dropping back as if they were too fast for him.
"Is that new armor?" Vector asked.
"That's what we told him. He won't put on anything pre-used or pre-worn." Chidan made air quotes with her fingers. On the screen, Chase had lowered his upper body and leaned forward, preparing to charge the factory team. A second later, there seemed to be an explosion that sent them flying in all directions, most of them parting company with at least one limb. Bright blue cyber blood splattered the track, the safety rail, and the players themselves.
"Now that's what I want to see my players doing on the track, taking apart the opposition," Vector enthused. "How soon can we get more chips for all our paladins?"
"As soon as they all get upgraded CNS and spinal cords. Oh, and I have to figure out how to fix it so they don't go insane with rage," Chidan said casually. "So, not for a while yet." Pause. "Maybe never."
"Paladins have tempers," Vector said, irritated. "They gotta be aggressive to play."
God, for a smart man, he could be so stupid, Chidan thought. "The chip accelerates aggression so it runs wild. Joshigan has the most self-control of any paladin I ever saw, but with that chip in him, he'd go homicidal before he could get a grip. The chip would ruin him and his CNS."
"Then we'll have to develop a better chip and a better CNS," Vector said, in a maddeningly reasonable tone. He might have been suggesting she carry an umbrella when it rained. "Whatever that is."
"Central nervous system," Chidan sighed. "You barge into the lab so much, I'd have thought you'd picked up a few things."
"Sometimes you think too much," Vector said, glowering.
"That's what you pay me to do. Think. There's more. Skip to Juggernaut," she told the screen. Juggernaut had four arms and, instead of legs, three wheels, a large one in front and two smaller ones behind. On the screen, he was racing along the track, visibly straining to go faster. Abruptly, the motorball flew into the back of his head. If he'd been on skates, he'd have gone down immediately. Instead, his wheels shifted to counter his fluctuating balance. His upper body lurched, swayed, and all four arms flailed as if he were attempting semaphore.
"Maybe we should have put the chip in Juggernaut," Vector said. "All those arms and wheels would have kept it busy."
"That's not a bad idea, but the extra limbs would still have to be more complex than just arms and wheels," Chidan said. "Limbs within limbs, motion within motion."
Vector nodded. "Okay, I'll put someone on that."
Sure he would, Chidan thought, as Chase appeared behind Juggernaut, this time in shining black armor. A box in the lower left-hand corner put their speed at 135 miles per hour. Chase moved around to Juggernaut's left and leaped up, spinning so rapidly that he kicked Juggernaut twice before he hit the track again. Juggernaut toppled over, wheels spinning. Turning sharply, Chase went back to where Juggernaut was lying on his side, tore off one of his arms, and began beating him with it. Paladins swarmed around him, trying to make him stop. One of them, a deceptively delicate-looking woman in bright crimson, distracted Chase long enough for one of the others to get the arm away from him. Chase simply tore off another and began swinging at the other paladins. Joshigan rolled onto the screen and tried to remonstrate. In the next moment, all the paladins were down and Chase was gone. "Pause," Chidan told the screen.
"What the hell?" Vector said.
"I could play it in extreme slow-mo so you could see all the details, but you wouldn't like it any better." Chase's adrenaline spiked when the other paladins surrounded him, so he laid them all out.
Why?
Vector grimaced. They're all on the same team. He felt threatened. He acted too quickly for second thoughts, Chidan said. It took me 2 days working around the clock to repair all the damage.
Can those guys play tomorrow night?
Vector asked. Yes, they're all fine. But Chase is gone. He's out there doing God knows what. Picking fights, no doubt. He'll probably end up with a price on his head. Vector sat back in his chair, took the napkin off his lap, and tossed it over his unfinished dinner.
Which some hunter-warrior will collect after looting the body. There goes our chip, probably to those Northland scumbags. I should have taken out all six of them, but I thought it would look excessive.
Maybe one of your street rats will get to the body first, Chidan said. Then you can buy it back from them.
This is all your fault, Vector said. You screwed the chip up instead of perfecting it like you said you would.
No, actually, my mistake was letting you talk me into putting a prototype into the cyborg body of a mercurial young man barely out of adolescence, Chidan told him silently. She sighed again.
Well, he snapped, how are you going to fix this? What hurts Motorball hurts me and everyone around me.
Chidan raised one perfect eyebrow. Am I included in that group?
You hurt yourself when you screw up, Vector told her. What are you going to do about it?
I could go out and search for him, Chidan said. Maybe with a big butterfly net?
Vector's eyes narrowed. For someone who claims to have no sense of humor, you smart off like you think you're funny.
Would you rather watch more video? Chidan said. There's a sequence where he tears off his trainer's cyber arm and...
Don't tell me. He beats him over the head with it, Vector said flatly. Does he ever do anything else?
He's dangerous, but not innovative, Chidan said. Vector told the screen to shut off.
I'll tell my people on the street to find him. Discreetly.
Chidan's eyebrows went up. He thought his street rats were discreet? Even if you find him in the next 15 minutes, I doubt he'll be game-worthy by tomorrow night.
We'll see.
Vector nodded at her plate.
If you're done, why don't you go slip into something more comfortable? I have a few calls to make before I join you. I won't be long, so wait up.
If you want me in the pit tomorrow, I need to get some sleep, Chidan said.
Fine. Don't wait up. I'll wake you.
Just what she needed, more mediocre sex. Chidan got up and left the room, wishing she didn't know he was watching her ass. Damn stilettos. Vector called Gamut on voice only and explained that he wanted a covert search. He'd have preferred to use Soledad, but when he called her, he got a brief recording saying she was unavailable, which hung up on him without inviting him to leave a message. He made a note to look into this and see what was keeping her so content that she could shrug him off. But first, he had to get his rogue paladin put to bed, which reminded him. Afterwards, Chidan lay with her back to Vector, pretending to be asleep. Why had he bothered? His heart hadn't been in it. But then, his heart never was in it. As far as she could tell, he didn't have one, only a mechanism that told him what would pay off and what wasn't worth the salt in his sweat. Not that she'd ever seen him sweat outside the bedroom. The penthouse was like a refrigerator, and she could practically see her breath in the limo. Maybe the air had to match the temperature of his blood. In any case, it didn't last long. Afterwards, he got up, put on his silk pajamas and robe, and went back to the office as if this had been a coffee break. Fine with her. Hours later, Vector stood beside the bed having a nightcap and watching Chidan sleep. She was lucky she was so good at what she did. As long as she kept making winners out of his paladins, he could put up with her being such a diva. But she had really let him down when she'd lost the paladin and the chip. He hoped for her sake this wasn't a portent of things to come. The moment she became more trouble than she was worth, he'd toss her down his own garbage chute. And that fall would be a hell of a lot harder than the one from Zalim. But right now, she was still useful.